Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. We're going to get everything started in just a minute with your week in review as we take a look at Monday Night Raw, we take a look at SmackDown, and there's a lot to cover. Everything from Baron Corbin getting crushed by Drew McIntyre to Edge and Orton having the greatest wrestling match ever to the wild card rule that is now back in effect. So yeah, there's a lot to talk about. Let's get everything started right after this. So here's something cool you guys should check out. It's a podcast called Midnight Double Feature. It's a long-form film podcast, and some of their main episodes are feature presentation episodes, which they pick a movie and run through it scene by scene, offering insights, but mainly just crappy jokes. They also have upcoming attraction episodes where they talk about the latest trailers, movie news, and review what's out there currently. Their community gets together on Facebook via a Facebook group called The After Party. Everyone's invited, by the way. In The After Party, they talk memes, news, play games, and just talk about random crap. It's open and really fun. They have their main page on Facebook. It's called Midnight Double Feature. On Instagram, it's at Midnight Double Feature. And Twitter is MDFPod. That's MDFPod. And if anyone has any movie requests or suggestions, feel free to email them at midnightdoublefeature@gmail.com. You can also find them on Apple Podcasts and give them a rating and review, which really would help out the show. So again, check out the podcast. It's called Midnight Double Feature. Hey, everybody. So it's not often that we talk about music here on this show or bands, but when we do, I think it's when it's worth listening to and when I run across a song or a band that I think it's worth sharing on this show. And that's one of these moments. And that's one of those bands that I think you guys should listen to. And it's just a particular song right now. And the song is called To the Fallen Sons. It's by a band called Carolus, C-A-R-O-L-U-S. And they're a newly formed band from Sweden. And they love making music about history, which is really, really cool. So this song in particular is about Carolians and the soldiers of the Swedish kings, King Charles VI and King Charles VII in the late 17th and 18th centuries. So let me give you a quick sample. And again, you can find them on Spotify under the song To the Fallen Sons. It's by Carolus, C-A-R-O-L-U-S.
WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast on this Sunday, May 24th, 2020. And we're going to get into everything that happened this week in WWE. A lot to talk about. There's a lot to talk about. And, you know, but before I get there, I just finished up. Well, I finished up SmackDown because I watched it a day late. 2 days late, really, in this case. Because for whatever reason, by the way, I have no idea. But Hulu and Fox was not or did not put up the SmackDown that happened on Friday. So I had to actually go and dig through the internet on one of those, illegal feeds and dig up a SmackDown feed that happened. I could not find it on Hulu. For whatever reason, they just decided to willy-nilly upload it. It's a pain in the ass, right? And so Hulu, get your stuff together. And in other news, I am still not on Twitter. It is still suspended for unknown reasons. I have contacted Twitter with no response. So this is just killing me that I haven't been able to interact with you guys. There's so much I've wanted to say. I hope it gets resolved sooner than later. It's out of my hands. I haven't got a reason why I'm suspended. Don't know. But this is the way I'm communicating with you. But you can still email me at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to still ask me questions or get in touch or anything like that. But I would like, before I get underway with the show, we have new co-hosts, and you might have heard them yesterday's show with the SmackDown review, and that's Jeff Martin and Brian Berga, and they are going to be covering SmackDown for us. And personally, I love the show. I think they did an awesome job. It's great to have them on board. Very excited to have them be a part of our network, and it's a pretty cool deal as they will cover the SmackDown Live or the Friday Night SmackDown review. It goes from like SmackDown to like SmackDown Live. Now it's Friday Night SmackDown. I'm just going to call it SmackDown. Easier, because SmackDown is the common denominator in whatever form they want to use for the SmackDown verbiage. So, welcome Jeff and Brian. Thank you for being a part of the team. And again, I'm riding solo today, but I'll be on Tuesday joined by Mary Grader as we cover Monday Night Raw, heading ever so close to Backlash, which is about 3 weeks away now. And Backlash is shaping up to be an interesting card. And in a lot of good ways and a lot of head-scratching ways. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, but Backlash is the next pay-per-view event, the next stop on this road to, I guess, WrestleMania 37, of which the entire wrestling year is built around. So technically, it's the road to WrestleMania 37. That's a bit of a stretch, but I guess it's true in a very long sense. But speaking of WrestleMania, I've said it before, I'll say it again, and maybe I'll do another review. If you haven't seen the Undertaker documentary, why? Please, answer me that. Seriously, stop listening to this. Just stop. And go to the WWE Network and watch it, because they released Chapter 3. And that covered a little bit of the John Cena match, of which he was disappointed that it was really short. I was too. I was very, like, what the hell's going on? He covered the WrestleManias with Shawn and with Triple H that were some of his all-time favorites. He covered his favorite moment ever in his career. Just really heartfelt. This is one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. And yes, I'm biased because I am a wrestling fan, and I assume you are too if you're listening to this show, but it is just a extraordinary look into the life of Mark Calloway, and a lot more respect for the man than we already had, which is pretty amazing to say considering the just mountain of respect that the most fans and wrestlers alike have for the man. So please, guys, do yourself a favor. Get back into what wrestling gets at, and that's your soul. That's your guts. It's your emotions. Not this silly, nonsensical, cinematic, terrible attempt at comedy stuff. It's the stuff that Mark Calloway was involved in the majority of his career. How serious he took his character. How much pride the man has in his performances. When he's going to hang it up, and to be honest, I know many of us have been predicting him, and rightfully so, and I think Mark Calloway would probably go along with what most fans believe is, oh, this has got to be it, this has got to be it. I would say this is probably it. The reason is, when I say this is it, this year is probably it, and maybe closing the chapter at WrestleMania 37. And because he's opening up so much, I think he realizes that this is it, and this would be a great way to go out with all the fans knowing what he treasured, what he went through, the things we never saw for 30 years, knowing the ins and outs, the backstage conversations, the stories we never knew, knowing all of that adds just another dimension to an already just probably the greatest career of all time. And I say that more than Austin, more than Rock, more than Hogan. This guy has really probably had the best career ever, more than Shawn Michaels, simply because of the longevity. So without reviewing Chapter 3, of which I probably will do another show on, and I'm tossing up in the air if I'm going to do a nostalgia on Wednesday or if I'm going to do a Undertaker Last Ride Part 3 or Chapter 3 review, let me know what you guys would want. You can't tweet me because God knows I don't know, maybe I violated something. I don't know what I did. I haven't been notified what I did, but I'm just locked out and again, suspended for some unknown reason. So I'll kick out of this suspension. They hit me with a finish, but I'll kick out. And I'll be back hopefully sooner than later. But boy, is it killing me. I'm like, you know, handcuffed. But email me at realwwepodcast@gmail.com and you'll be able to give me your opinions and let me know what you guys would want, because I'm really up in the air about what Wednesday's show is going to be, simply because of how brilliant this whole documentary has been. And there's just so much to cover, right? The sad thing is that the next documentary isn't dropping until Backlash. So we got 3 weeks until the next chapter. So I don't know what their deal is with that, but the next chapter is going to be covering the Goldberg match. That I'm very interested to hear about Mark's thoughts and others' thoughts. I'm sure they were very careful on the language used about that match and probably don't go into too much detail about it, simply because it's just, there's really no redeeming quality about that match. There's nothing good about that match. It was just a total bomb from start to finish. So they don't tend to focus on the negative for too long, and I understand why. So, and Mark doesn't like to bury somebody. He always tries to take the blame himself. And I think to some extent, not all, but to some extent, he probably will for that. That's just my assumption based on what I've seen him and listened to him so far about certain performances. But that's the next chapter. Unfortunately, it is a 3 week wait. So you have 3 weeks, if you haven't already, to catch yourself up on chapters 1, 2, and 3. So I get, you know, many people think probably, hey, you're getting paid to talk about this. No, I'm not. WWE and I are not affiliated in any capacity at all. So that's what's great about this show, is I don't want to be affiliated with WWE, because then I would feel obligated to speak highly of them in all aspects. And that's not what I want. That's not what I don't want state-run radio like Corey Graves or New Day or Booker T's podcast or any of the other stars that are currently under contract with WWE. Yeah, they're stars and they automatically have an advantage going into creating a podcast because you already have that built-in audience. But you also have to understand, while I don't think they're lying to you about anything, they probably feel a due diligence and a tug on them to never speak negatively of the product. And that's what this is. That's what's great about this. And you know, kudos to all those guys. They run great shows. But my point is, the advantage for us is actually not being affiliated with WWE, because we have no ties. We have no agenda. We just talk about whatever the hell we want. We say what we feel, and many people view it as complaining. I've went over this before, but I mean, view it however the hell you want. The fact of the matter is, when I see something that I don't like, I call it. So, okay, let's get into Monday Night Raw after the big open here. And, well, not Monday Night Raw, because I did my Raw review. I'll touch on Raw. But since I haven't covered SmackDown, given my thoughts with this week in its happenings in WWE, and again, if you want the full SmackDown review, check out the inaugural SmackDown review podcast that dropped on Saturday from Brian and Jeff. Great, great, great show. They did an excellent job. So check out the full in-depth review there. But some of the things off the top of my head, that's just in general. WWE simply cannot help themselves. They can't help themselves when it comes to creating brand extensions or separate brands. And they do a brand draft. And it doesn't take long before they implement silly rules or no rules with no explanation why someone is on a show that they shouldn't be on. And just can't help themselves but to have stars cross over. And it's really always just a matter of time before somebody ends up crossing over. And whether it's the wild card rule that was they even made fun of it on air of how terribly implemented it was. I mean, the stars come over and they go, you know, I don't even know if I'm here because of the wild card rule, whatever that stupid thing is. I mean, I remember Kevin Owens killing it and it went away silently. It died a slow death. And then they implemented the hard split of the drafts of the brands and the rosters. And you were wondering how long it would take before they just couldn't help themselves and bring somebody over that shouldn't be there. And I think they did it with Rey Mysterio a couple of times, and he just inexplicably goes to one brand or the other. I remember that happening. But now it's really pronounced. They have really, really dove in deep here. And so it went from, what, October 1st, I think, was the first date of the hard split because of the first live broadcast of SmackDown and Fox. So that puts them at, what, 8 months, 7.5 months, 8 months? And honestly, longer than I thought. But the explanation here is they didn't call it the wild card rule anymore, even though that's exactly what it is. They called it the brand invitational, where only 4 times a year this can happen. Really? Okay. So I would love for somebody to keep track of this. I'm going to do my best to keep track of the brand invitational. Now, they've burned one. They've burned one. And that means that Charlotte was the one that they burned last week. And there goes that. So there's three left. But is it calendar year? Is it from the date effective of apparently last SmackDown? What was it, May 16th or whatever the heck it was? So I don't know. I mean, you tell me. There's just so loosey-goosey. They didn't even bother to tell us ahead of time. And then AJ Styles comes over inexplicably, although given an explanation that he was traded to SmackDown for future draft considerations. Now, I like the language. The language is very professional sports-esque. Major League Baseball uses that. NFL uses it, right? And I would assume most professional sports use that language. So it sounds like they know what they're talking about. But if you just even dig a scratch beneath the surface, you would know that major stars that are traded from one team to the other are not given future draft picks. They're not given future draft considerations. They're given usually a blockbuster deal for, you know, megastar for megastar or megastar for, you know, four other guys. And it's a bit eye-rolling that they just brought him over and didn't let us know that it was going to happen, number one. This is major news, or at least it should be, that AJ Styles, one of the biggest stars in WWE, was traded from Raw to SmackDown. And let's face it, we all know the reason why he was, and I have no objections to it. None, because the fact is that SmackDown needs help. SmackDown needs a top heel. And with the pandemic going on, they don't have a full roster to pull from. So bringing him over, shuffling things up at their discretion, I get it. Because you're going to run through matches and rivalries very quickly. I totally understand that. I'm sympathetic to it. I agree with it in this instance. So while I don't like when they split the brand, the brand rules, and they don't abide by their own, and they just make that up as it goes along, I despise that. I'm giving them a pass because of the current situation. I do wonder, had this coronavirus pandemic never happened, that you would still have had this type of instance. I think you would have. I really do. I think he would have. May not have been that as soon as this happened, but I think it still would have happened. I just disagree with the presentation, the methodology in which they presented how this happened. It was a quick announcement by Michael Cole. I mean, whatever. So AJ Styles is on SmackDown. Great. And he's headed to the finals of the Intercontinental Championship tournament. Agree. I think that could be a great matchup, whether it's Daniel Bryan. Well, actually, I think it will probably come down to Daniel Bryan versus AJ rather than Jeff Hardy versus AJ Styles. And let's face it, AJ Styles is beating Elias. I mean, does anybody see Elias winning that match? You just can't. Elias right now is kind of like, I don't want to say he's irrelevant. He certainly feeds off of the energy of the crowd, of which there is none right now. And he just is kind of there floating around and without real direction. So I think that he could get screwed by Baron Corbin and that rivalry continues. That's what I think ultimately is going to happen. Or AJ Styles flat out beats him clean. But AJ Styles is advancing to the finals. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I mean, I would bet a serious amount of money that AJ Styles wins that match. Serious amount. So AJ Styles wins, goes to the finals, and then I think it's probably Daniel Bryan versus AJ Styles. I don't think Jeff Hardy will, because I think Sheamus will end up screwing him out of the match. Ends up with the Jeff Hardy Sheamus one-on-one match at Backlash. And that's where I think this whole thing will go. And ultimately, I don't know who will win the belt. I mean, Daniel Bryan cut a fiery promo last week about what it meant to him. AJ Styles is on the mend from being buried alive, and I don't think The Undertaker and AJ Styles program is necessarily done either. So there's some avenues to explore here. This is not a cut and clean, very simplistic, easy answer. It really isn't. I ultimately think Daniel Bryan will probably end up with it, because I think he can add the most value and he's the most available superstar right now. AJ's kind of coming off, like I said, with the burial. And Daniel Bryan, let's face it, isn't doing a whole lot. And Drew Gulak is gone from WWE. So there's really not a whole lot to discuss there. So, all right. I'm going to take a quick break. But on the other side, we're going to get to a lot more stuff, right? Like, we're going to get to the Charlotte and Bayley match, which actually I really liked that. Charlotte and Bayley worked very well together. I had forgotten the chemistry that they have, and Bayley is just tearing it up. And I do have a lot of good things to say about that match, as well as some other stuff going on. I have some very positive things to talk about. But when we come back from the break, I'm going to get on a little bit of a tangent with the way that matches are ending, and I'll explain right after this.
Stay right there. The WWE podcast will return after this quick break.
Big Show Joe. This podcast is for fun and entertainment. Nothing is too serious here, and they feature odd news. Some will be different, random crap that's just plain weird, strange, kooky, and far out. Why? Because they tried regular news and it's just depressing crap. So bring on the freaky, funky, ghastly stories that are floating around. They cannot verify the correctness of any story, so you be the judge of that. The Big Show is a diversion from the norm and a blast of absurdity, a joke or three that they take seriously in a recreational goofball way. So check out the Big Show podcast by Big Show Joe today. So here's something cool you guys should check out. It's a podcast called Midnight Double Feature. It's a long-form film podcast, and some of their main episodes are feature presentation episodes, which they pick a movie and run through it scene by scene, offering insights, but mainly just crappy jokes. They also have upcoming attraction episodes where they talk about the latest trailers, movie news, and review what's out there currently. Their community gets together on Facebook via a Facebook group called The After Party. Everyone's invited, by the way. In The After Party, they talk memes, news, play games, and just talk about random crap. It's open and really fun. They have their main page on Facebook. It's called Midnight Double Feature. On Instagram, it's @MidnightDoubleFeature. And Twitter is MDF Pod. That's MDF Pod. And if anyone has any movie requests or suggestions, feel free to email them at midnightdoublefeature@gmail.com. You can also find them on Apple Podcasts and give them a rating and review, which really would help out the show. So again, check out the podcast. It's called Midnight Double Feature. Hey, everybody. So it's not often that we talk about music here on this show or bands, but when we do, I think it's when it's worth listening to and when I run across a song or a band that I think it's worth sharing on this show. And that's one of these moments. And that's one of those bands that I think you guys should listen to. And it's just a particular song right now. And the song is called To the Fallen Sons. It's by a band called Carolus, C-A-R-O-L-U-S. And they're a newly formed band from Sweden. And they love making music about history, which is really, really cool. So this song in particular is about Carolians and the soldiers of the Swedish kings, King Charles VI and King Charles VII in the late 17th and 18th centuries. So let me give you a quick sample. And again, you can find them on Spotify under the song To the Fallen Sons. It's by Carolus, C-A-R-O-L-U-S.
WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
All right, everybody, welcome back, and thanks for staying with us. Quick thing on the ads. If you guys want an ad free experience, head on over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast, and you can get yourself ad free. Alrighty, well. So here's the thing about the way that matches have been ending lately. And I don't know what this is about. And you know, maybe this is a trend that is larger over a larger span of time than my mind is gathering together. And that's that, you know, you have this kick-ass match, right? You're kicking each other, you're punching each other, you're doing, you know, super kicks to their faces that should leave, you know, teeth on the ground and should essentially give them many, many concussions. All of that is, I know it's pro wrestling, but it's the effect of the move that you are trying to portray that you are inflicting on your opponent. All of which, many of which should be knockout shots, right? And you're doing all this great stuff. And then what does the match do? Ends in a roll up. How many times have we seen roll-ups happen? I mean, just last night, or two nights ago on SmackDown, we saw two major, major ones. Jeff Hardy and Sheamus, Jeff Hardy getting the victory. And then you saw Bayley beat Charlotte with that. And yes, she used the ropes, but the match, I'm not understanding why this has to always be the thing. And it's almost as sinful as 50-50 booking. And you may say, well, why? Well, 50-50 booking, as we all know, is you have wrestler X win, lose, so they gain no ground. They're just sitting there treading water, and fans become indifferent, and they just really don't care about that particular person because they have no momentum behind them. They're just going nowhere. And that's just a cardinal sin that pro wrestling as an industry has been guilty of over many, many years. But the roll-up is, I think, worse because it's a chicken, you know what, way out of a true victory for that individual. Meaning that the creative thought behind it is, the creative discussions behind this is, well, we can't really have either one lose. So we're going to have wrestler X win, but in a way that looks like it could be a fluke. And that's how the Jeff Hardy Sheamus match, although good, but that's how it was presented. And my God, we actually got a promo from Jeff Hardy backstage. It didn't feel awkward. And we'll get to awkward promos in a minute. But how many times have we seen roll-ups? They can be used. You know, you can use a small package. You can use, you know, several different pinning combinations that should surprise your opponent, and you get the occasional surprise victory. But this seems to be a recurring theme where are they using it to protect the person that's losing so it looks like they just got surprised and could feasibly have an out for why they got pinned, that they were just surprised, and it's not like they got hit with their opponent's finish and lost clean. I guess that's the thinking. Or I think that in concert with that they want the anything can happen at any moment, sudden victory. No, it just creates a lot of excitement. It happens out of nowhere. And I understand that, but again, it's the overuse of it. And in big, big, big spots, you have champion versus champion. You have a semifinal tournament going on. And you have the matches end like that. I mean, it's you do all these crazy moves and then things end in a roll-up. I mean, you see it time and again, and I don't know. I mean, does anybody else get bothered by this? It's just a recurring theme. But speaking of awkward promos, can John Morrison be any weirder on the mic? This guy's got $1 million body, but he's got a $2 mouth. I mean, and I don't mean it's weird. And I say that because it just, I don't know, that's what came to my head. But he doesn't stutter. He doesn't speak and say things that are wrong or that he doesn't know what he's talking about. He just, I think it's his cadence and delivery. He just, you can't follow his tone. Like when someone's speaking, you can generally not just hear the words, but feel the feeling. With John Morrison, he's so up and down and all around, and he enunciates words that I feel like he shouldn't, and then misses words that he should have enunciated. And it's his voice on top of it that's kind of weird. It's not very deep. It's just kind of like, it's kind of like high school boy. And look, I'm not making fun of him. It's just the way that it comes off. I mean, he just has a weird voice and then he uses it weird on top of it. So John Morrison, I mean, great body. I think he's a great talent. No doubt. This guy does things that I can't even dream of. Right. But his promos, yikes. I don't know. Maybe somebody else can defend him. I just find his promos a bit weird. And him and Morrison, or him and Miz, I think are a good pair. I'm surprised that they just shoved him back in the team that he left 7 years ago. But because I think Morrison could have been more instead of just going back right where he left off. So that was a bit weird. But you know, they stuck him with Miz, and they seem to be catching on. They do the dirt sheet. Oh, we're doing the dirt sheet, right? I mean, somebody in creative probably thought that that was such a genius move to call or use a term that is kind of an insider term, but everyone knows about what it means, that it's just internet sites that like to spread dirt to get clicks, right? That's generally what the dirt sheet is. So yeah, it's an insider term. That's cute that you use it as the name of a show, but no one really brings to the forefront of what the dirt sheet actually really means. It's kind of a wink and nod, haha, you know, nice play on words to bring things out into the open, whatever. And so the Miz and Morrison, by the way, on SmackDown, Morrison gets in Braun Strowman's face after they run him down. And then Braun Strowman wants to go after the Miz. John Morrison's the one that just talked a bunch of crap. I didn't understand that. I don't know why Braun Strowman is going after Morrison or after the Miz, but yeah, whatever. We're getting a 2-on-1 handicap match for the Universal Championship at Backlash with Miz and Morrison versus Braun Strowman. And boy, it's just very telling that they don't think that there's anyone in WWE that can stack up one-on-one against Braun Strowman, especially when he has a championship around his waist. I mean, yes, you got Bray Wyatt, and we know The Fiend is on the way, probably a Backlash. But it's very telling, because what happened with the Intercontinental title? Braun Strowman did a 3-on-1 handicap match for the Intercontinental Championship and lost it to Sami Zayn, of which that's a damn tragedy he had to give it up. So, I mean, I don't know why this is suddenly a trend. I mean, I don't know. I don't get it. But if anybody believes that Miz and Morrison are going to truly become the United States or the Universal Champion, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I don't know if you've been watching wrestling for more than, you know, a week or two. Miz and Morrison have about as much of a chance as I do of WWE sponsoring this podcast on the network. I.e., there is a 0% chance of that happening. So, anyway, those are some of the things from SmackDown. And yes, we also got Otis and Mandy versus Sonya Deville and Dolph Ziggler. And we ended up having Sonya Deville defeat Mandy Rose clean, and then Dolph Ziggler super kick Otis and leave him laying as he continues to do his bowl full of jelly. And, you know, Vince McMahon gets his knee slap laughs in the back while, you know, everyone else kind of groans at what they're doing with Otis. But that's the tag match that we ultimately wanted to see, and we got the payoff. I don't know how much longer this could go. Clearly, it's moving towards Backlash. I mean, these programs are still going on. I would think that it's probably going to end in a tag team match again with something on the line, and maybe Mandy Rose turning on Otis, that we all thought was going to happen from the beginning anyway. Just a thought. But this clearly is ending in some kind of tag team match at Backlash. Some kind of, I don't know, like something on a pole match. Who the hell knows? I mean, there'll be something gimmicky and weird with this. But so that's that. But again, the one good thing I want to talk about, not the one good thing, one of the good things is Charlotte versus Bayley. And I touched on it a little bit. But Charlotte versus Bayley, man, I mean, yeah, we haven't seen these two in the ring in a few months together, but it's really nice. It's refreshing to see. These two are work very well together. I would love to see them again in the ring, and I think we will. What's weird is, and it's really hard, as I think of these things, because I made a lot of notes here on SmackDown. How did Charlotte get in a Raw Women's Championship, number one contender, triple threat match? I mean, I don't understand this. Is WWE that desperate for star power that they have to just bring her everywhere? I mean, she's on NXT. I said, well, great. She'll just be kind of exclusive to NXT, make NXT feel special. And then they bring on SmackDown. And then they bring her inexplicably in a triple threat Raw Women's Championship number one contenders match with her, Natalya, and Nia Jax. I mean, can this be any more obvious, though? And it's not bad that it's obvious, because I think it's the right move. But the fact that you think Charlotte even has a chance in this match is laughable, because she's the NXT Women's Champion. She can't be doing double duty. I mean, we've seen it before with Becky, but different scenario. This is not a winner-take-all. NXT needs to be the focus here. And then you also have Natalya, who showed signs of turning heel last week. Does she continue that? Continue her frustration? I think she ends up taking the fall. She's in the match to take the fall and maybe show more frustration and start tearing more stuff up in the ring. So maybe it's just not to, or it's to protect Charlotte. And we have Nia Jax pin Natalya, because I think ultimately Nia Jax is going to win, and it's going to come down to Asuka versus Nia Jax at Backlash. And, you know, I think that could be a good story told there. It's David versus Goliath. Although, God knows they won't say David versus Goliath, because God forbid they mention anything about women's weight. Even though that's how championships in any sport are classified, especially in one-on-one competition. In wrestling especially, like Greco-Roman wrestling. Right? You have weight classes. even in women's wrestling. But God forbid we do it here because of the image. We don't want them. Women don't weigh anything. They're all weightless, right? It's just how much air is in them. I mean, like, really, are we gonna go that road? They'll never mention it, and I know why, right? I'm not trying to cause a controversy here, but it's just funny how they'll say it's David versus Goliath in the men's division, but I guarantee you they will not say David versus Goliath in the women's division. Guaranteed. They might mention, the size difference. They might say that. They might, although probably find softer verbiage to really just say, Nia Jax is a lot bigger and heavier. She's a much bigger woman than Asuka. I mean, let's just put it out there. Asuka is probably 100 pounds less than Nia Jax. But they will never, ever say that. But the story there is fine because I think Asuka is a great worker. Nia Jax is questionable at times. She plays a great heel. I despise Nia Jax as a performer, I'm saying as a heel, because I think Nia Jax has improved. I just think her personality, especially in, at least from what I've seen in real life, from what she's shown us on Twitter, of course, if she was listening to this, she would probably say, you don't know me. Well, you know what? I don't. But from what you've shown us on social media, outside of your wrestling persona, I'm not a fan. Okay? I don't have to be, though. That's fine. I'm nothing against you. I just do not like your personality. Doesn't mean you have to like mine. It's just life. It's just life. So I think that her natural personality, at least for my taste, is much more suited to a heel. She's an asset to Raw. Big asset to Raw. No pun intended. And she is, I think, going to have a good match against Asuka, because I think Asuka is a performer that you could stick in with anybody and have a good match with. So I don't believe Nia Jax will win that match, although as predictions get closer, let's get through the match first. Let's get through the triple threat match. But I don't know if Nia Jax would have a shot at Asuka winning that. I mean, I think it might be too soon, especially just given that we're off of Becky announcing her pregnancy and basically anointing Asuka as the next women's champion. So more to come on that. But don't worry, guys. At Backlash, we're going to get the greatest wrestling match ever. It's coming. The greatest wrestling match ever is coming. And it's going to be better than anything you've ever seen, because it's going to be Edge versus Randy Orton. I mean, what a standard to put on. What a bar. An unrealistic bar to put on this match. Who thought of this? And who approved this? Why, I mean, Vince McMahon. I mean, I answered my own question. Why would Vince approve this? This is... How can you tell me ahead of time that this is going to be the greatest wrestling match of all time? That's not something that happens ahead of time. That's something that happens and is awarded in retrospect. When you're reviewing a match, it happens as we watch it, right? So the fact that they're trying to sell this as the greatest wrestling match ever, in a sport that we're supposed to believe is real, or at least that's how you get emotionally invested anyway. What if if this sport is supposed to be presented as real and we're supposed to care, because it should be, because that's how you care as a human being, you realize that that's a contrasting goal for this match. Because with these competitors, Orton and Edge, their goal should be to win the match. Beat your opponent. It shouldn't be to have the greatest wrestling match ever. That's a side effect of a match. That shouldn't be their goal, right? That's something that happens afterwards, after we look back and go, wow, that was a great match. But that's not how you build it. Because what if they just, if again, the construct of pro wrestling is you want to beat your opponent. Well, what if Edge comes in? His goal should be to defeat Randy Orton quickly, just as Randy should. What if Randy comes in and hits an RKO and pins Edge? Is that considered the greatest wrestling match of all time? But you want to bill it as that, and then yet tell us at the same time that Randy Orton could strike with an RKO at any time and win the match? So, I mean, do you see the bit of a problem here with the messages? Is anybody believing this? It's laughable. It's laughable that they are actually trying to sell this as the greatest wrestling match ever. Is this seriously like a joke? It's got to be. And I knew the night that Charlie Caruso said it, that wasn't her own words. At least I hope they weren't. And then just, she came out of nowhere saying that if this match happens after Randy Orton challenged Edge, that if this match happens, this could be the greatest wrestling match ever. And I'm saying, I laughed. I'm like, did she really just go into business for herself and say that? It's a joke. And yeah, they could have a great match. They could have one of the best matches of the last 5 years. But to say it's the greatest wrestling match ever ahead of time. Are you the Oracle? It's stupid. Because it's an exposure of the business. It takes me out of the moment with your marketing. It's just, and I'm not overthinking this, right? I'm not. I've never heard them. I've never, ever, ever in my 23 years of listening to watching wrestling, ever have I ever heard, or never have I ever, if that's a game, right? It's a fun game. I've never heard WWE market it ahead of time as the greatest wrestling match ever. I've heard of them in retrospect say that that might be the greatest performance, or the I hate when they say performance, right? Because we're like what, community theater, we all come out and take a bow. I hate that crap. It's I've heard them say it at the moment, like for example, I will continue to say this because this is still one of the best matches I've ever seen ever in my life. Undertaker Shawn Michaels WrestleMania 25. I mean, mic drop, please. You're telling me this match is going to be better than that. Because you said ever. You said ever. If they said greatest wrestling match of the year, I mean, that's terrible in and of itself because it still exposes the business, but it might be a little bit more realistic. Yeah, it could be. Maybe. But if their goal is to win, what if the match ends in 30 seconds? I mean, you're just banking on that we're more worried about performing for the crowd that's not there or at home than actually winning the match. That's what you're telling them. That's what you're telling us with that marketing. It's terrible. It's terrible marketing. It's just silly. So I'm going to get off that because it just, every time I see it, and I knew when Charlie Caruso said it, I said, oh, they got their tagline. They came up with this in a boardroom or a production meeting or Skype or WebEx or Zoom or whatever platform they're using to have this conversation with their production team meetings with Vince on the line. He's like, damn it. That's great. I love that. I mean, I can hear it. Good God. All right. Nonetheless, I am looking forward to all that said, I am looking forward to the match. I really am. Because it's a straight up wrestling match, which should have been to begin with, or at least been a lot more in the ring action at WrestleMania. I think that's really what the hang up is with me. But okay. All right, moving on here. What else do I have to talk about? Yeah, so, and I mentioned this in the Raw review, but with Drew McIntyre as WWE champion, I'm loving it. I think Drew McIntyre is fitting in quite well. He feels like he belongs. He doesn't feel like he's playing a champion. He feels like he is a champion. That's great. Love it. I think Drew McIntyre is money right now, and it's a damn shame it's in front of nobody. And yet you have Corbin, who went to Raw. So, by the way, did they just torch two out of the four invitationals? Let's keep track, right? Everybody out there, let's keep track of their four, apparently, Michael Cole said it, four invitationals per year. Now, you could say, is that four per show for a total of eight? Or is it just four overall? I'm thinking it's probably four per show, now that I'm talking to myself. That's how they'll bill it anyway. So each show gets to do an invitational four times a year. So anyway, but we did get Corbin coming to Raw, and we knew that he was just there because WWE needed something new and something fresh. And I understand. And Drew has been just running through the Zelina Vega group. I have no other words for it because that's just what it is right now. It's Andrade and Angel Garza because Austin Theory is now with Seth, which I really like, by the way. And having him just mow them over every week, number one, is getting redundant because he's done it many times now, and it's also hurting that group. And I'm glad that he's moved away. And he went to Corbin for a week. But what's he do next week? Right? I mean, Bobby Lashley's around. That's good. I like Bobby Lashley getting an opportunity. But having Drew there and having Corbin there, Corbin is just, I kind of had this thought that, you know, Corbin, many people don't like Corbin. Many people think that he has a go-away heat to him. And I totally see that. But you could also argue, well, heat's heat. That's what you want. Well, not when it's channel changing. I don't like the product heat. It's a very fine line. But you also don't want a heel that's too cool, because then they're really not a heel. They're a babyface. So you want a heel that's not go away, change channel, but it's a heel that you want to pay to see someone beat up. Yet they're not too entertaining to be a babyface. It's a very, very narrow road that's not easy to travel or find. So with that said, Corbin just has no opportunity to build heat. He gets an ounce of heat with a backstage promo and then immediately gets it blown off and shut up with losing the match. He needs cronies. I said this on my Raw review. He needs cronies. He needs backup. He needs someone to join him, a group of people to join him, servants. I don't care. Peasants, whatever king stereotypical verbiage that a heel King of the Ring winner uses. Subjects, I mean, take your pick, whatever. He needs those people to blindly follow him, just as Seth does. And if it's similar, right? Seth is the Messiah, Corbin is the king. And those are two gimmicks built for heels. And so my point is, I think Corbin needs heat. He just doesn't have any, because he gets his ass whipped every time he opens his mouth. So Corbin needs to get on a bit of a roll. He has been defined down quite a bit now. You know, since the Roman Reigns just marathon that was, he hasn't really had any notable wins. So I think Corbin could certainly use some momentum, the all-important key word that WWE likes to make sure they have that they fulfill the quota of saying 20 times per show. So, yeah, anyway, on to another topic here, and that is Seth Rollins and his group that he's slowly starting to rebuild. After Seth's defeat at WrestleMania, defeat at Money in the Bank, he has moved on, but gained two followers, and Murphy coming back, and having Aleister Black, Austin Theory now join him, a young guy. Great. You know, I mentioned this on Raw, so I'm not going to go into too much detail. But again, the point of groups is to build new stars, especially young guys. Great. I think that's an awesome thing to do. It's the right thing to do. It gives them the rub. It gives them exposure. It gives them more eyeballs on the product to have people who go, who's this? Every week go, oh, okay, I'm starting to learn. I would like to hear from Austin Theory himself. We haven't heard a word from him since he's come up. So that would be helpful too. But I like these three together. They're three young guys with Seth. Seth is the grizzled veteran, and he's not exactly, you know, Grandpa Seth. Like, he's pretty damn young himself in the prime of his career, but he's helped building new stars. So bravo to that. I'm all for that. And maybe AOP join, but I like how he's slowly gaining followers, and he's the way he gets followers are by exposing them, or not exposing them, but approaching them at their weakest moment. That's such a cowardly thing to do. When they're at their weakest, that's when you strike. I love it. And I love what Seth's doing. So, where they will fight for him, he won't fight for them. That is also a very chicken, you know what to do. And I'm loving that, because that is such a disdainable trait to have as a human being, where you will have other people fight for you, but you won't fight for them. And we have seen it time and again, and they just continue to blindly fight for Seth. And it's brilliant. So, all right. Well, I mean, I think that's it for now. I mean, there's some other things that we could go over, but with Kevin Owens' return, and I touched on Natalya a little bit with, and Shayna Baszler's winning this week. Great move there. I think Shayna Baszler needs to get back on track, and it seems like she is. The Iconics back is also a really good thing. I think the Iconics should be the next tag team champions. Women's tag team champions. Bobby Lashley versus Drew McIntyre is, I think, something new. I think it's a good thing to do. And I think Bobby Lashley has been, for a while, put on kind of the back burner and put in silly storylines. Him and R-Truth. Bobby Lashley and MVP are a good, really good combo. And it seems as if this week, MVP for the... Did the WWE say that Drew McIntyre is going to make his debut or first time ever on the VIP lounge? If that's true, no, that's not true. Because I remember when MVP tried to get the services or to extend the services of his management to Drew, and Drew outright just said no, and Claymore kicked him in the face. I mean, that's just... So I don't know how they build it, but I thought about that. And one last thing, as everything's racing to my mind, closing the show here, is can wrestlers stop announcing when they're going to hit their finishing maneuvers? Especially in a quiet arena. Sheamus did this on SmackDown, saying, "Brogue!" And then he was about to kick his opponent in the head. Drew McIntyre counts down 3-2-1. I mean, what? I mean, you could argue, well, Shawn Michaels did the pounding or the tuning up the band, and then hit his finish, but he didn't yell it. I mean, you have these guys yelling. It's basically like, "Here comes my finish. Are you ready?" I mean, jeez. Ay, ay, ay. All right. Well, there really was a lot of good this week with quality wrestling matches. I'm starting to settle into this no crowd audience or no crowd environment, as we all kind of are at this point. And again, watch The Undertaker Last Ride if you want some true wrestling cleansing palette type of programming. It is awesome. So, all right, guys. Well, thank you for joining me on this weekend review. Yes, I don't get everything. There's just too much detail to cover, but I'll be back on Tuesday with a Raw review with Mary Grader. Wednesday's either going to be a Chapter 3 review or a wrestling nostalgia. So hit me up at my email at realwwepodcast@gmail.com and give me your opinions on what you'd like to see or hear. So hopefully by then I get my Twitter resolved. It's killing me. So, all right, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. Hit me up on also Instagram. I'm actually on Instagram and Facebook. And give us a subscribe on Apple Podcasts and review us there. It really helps out the show. I'm available everywhere that podcasts are available. So thank you so much, guys, for listening. I'll be talking to you soon. So here's something cool you guys should check out. It's a podcast called Midnight Double Feature. It's a long-form film podcast, and some of their main episodes are feature presentation episodes, which they pick a movie and run through it scene by scene, offering insights, but mainly just crappy jokes. They also have upcoming attraction episodes where they talk about the latest trailers, movie news, and review what's out there currently. Their community gets together on Facebook via a Facebook group called The After Party. Everyone's invited, by the way. In The After Party, they talk memes, news, play games, and just talk about random crap. It's open and really fun. They have their main page on Facebook. It's called Midnight Double Feature. On Instagram, it's at Midnight Double Feature. And Twitter is MDF Pod. That's MDF Pod. And if anyone has any movie requests or suggestions, feel free to email them at midnightdoublefeature@gmail.com. You can also find them on Apple Podcasts and give them a rating and review, which really would help out the show. So again, check out the podcast. It's called Midnight Double Feature. Hey, everybody. So it's not often that we talk about music here on this show or bands, but when we do, I think it's when it's worth listening to and when I run across a song or a band that I think it's worth sharing on this show. And that's one of these moments, and that's one of those bands that I think you guys should listen to. And it's just a particular song right now. And the song is called To the Fallen Sons. It's by a band called Carolus, Carolus. And they're a newly formed band from Sweden, and they love making music about history, which is really, really cool. So this song in particular is about Carolians and the soldiers of the Swedish kings, King Charles VI and King Charles VII in the late 17th and 18th centuries. So let me give you a quick sample. And again, you can find them on Spotify under the song To the Fallen Sons. It's by Carolus, Carolus.
Listening to the WWE podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to wwepodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/wwepodcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.